and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great hour for you. There's just so much stuff to cover. We're going to go everything from Amazon Echo spying on you to a joint FBI Department of Homeland Security bulletin that just explodes the problem that we had into the 2016 election. Our deep dive is actually going to be on Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Everybody loves this guy. Everybody hates this guy. He's a political football. He's also a journalist. He's also under indictment. And I'm just going to dive into this. I think you guys are really going to find that fascinating because I did my homework. We're going to go back all the way 12 years to just talk about all the good, bad, and ugly about this. You guys are going to have a great hour. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in U.S. intelligence news, a joint intelligence bulletin has been issued by the Department of Homeland Security and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, to basically state and local authorities regarding Russian hacking activities during the 2016 presidential election. That's right. We have a big update to Russian interference in the 2016 election, and it's flying under the radar. Literally, I may be the only news source that you hear this from in your day-to-day. I mean, honestly, that's kind of nuts, but I had to go digging for this, and I keep up with daily intelligence briefings by virtue of being a member of specific groups that are attached to federal law enforcement, all of that, for daily briefings. So with that, this is absolutely fascinating. And I'm going to quote here from all of this. While the bulletin contains no new technical information, it is the first official report to confirm that the Russian reconnaissance and hacking efforts in advance of the election went well beyond the 21 states confirmed in the previous reports. Now, there had been a joint report that was released before that says, meaning federal law enforcement and intelligence, know that 21 states were targeted by Russian actors, to basically, at best, recon, at worst, break into these websites. Now, I will continue, and I quote, previously observed suspicious or malicious cyber activity against government networks in 21 states that we assessed was a Russian campaign seeking vulnerabilities and access to election infrastructure. That was the foundation for what this report is built on. New information obtained by the agencies, and I quote, indicates that Russian government cyber actors engaged in research on, as well as direct visits to, election websites and networks in the majority of U.S. states. The FBI and DHS assess that Russian government cyber actors probably conducted research and reconnaissance against all U.S. states' election networks leading up to the 2016 presidential election. Now, between June and October 2016, the group associated with election hacking, and I quote, researched websites and information related to elections in at least 39 states and territories, according to a newly available FBI information or FBI source. And I quote again, the same actors also directly visited states in at least 30 states, mostly election-related government sites at both the state and local level, some of which overlap with the 39 researched states. Now, the actors performed their research, and I quote, in alphabetical order by state name. So in other words, if you're thinking, oh, well, we're going to look at swing states first, or the Russians looked at swing states first, like Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, they started with A. That's what they did. You know, Alabama, Alaska, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think Alabama is the first, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the first state in the alphabet. Basically, they said that they did this alphabetical order by state name, and I quote, suggesting that at least the initial research was not targeted at specific states. Now, this research focused on Secretary of State voter registration and election results sites, but it also drilled down to some local election officials' web pages. And as they accessed the sites, the actors, and I quote, regularly attempted to identify and exploit SQL database vulnerabilities in web servers and databases. Now, basically what this means is that if you have SQL or SQL database, you can run multiple attacks on this if it's not patched or it's insecure or it's an older version. And if you're able to exploit that, that is where a lot of information is going to be stored. So if I have a company and I have 10,000 records in it, I'm going to use a Microsoft SQL database basically to store those 10,000 records, let's say their names, addresses, phone numbers, et cetera. So a lot of companies or a lot of organizations use SQL or SQL to keep this information out there. And if it is not properly secured, here we are. And so that is obviously a major problem that we have, because that vastly widens the scope of what it was. It's not just the original 21 states as mentioned. We are literally looking at all 50 states at least having reconnaissance done on them, which means that when we are looking at the next election, and this was one of the reasons why I speculate, this is one of the reasons why this was put out and specifically given to state and local authorities as they are involved in the election, is because they want all 50 states. I don't care if you're Alaska or Rhode Island or, you know, whatever it is. We want everybody to be on high alert here. We don't want vote totals changed or the election tampered with in any electronic way or physical way for that matter. And so I think this election in 2020, we're going to be on high alert for. And we did see some activity in 2018, but it wasn't nearly as insane as 2016. Now, that said, a midterm election is not a presidential election, which tends to be the bigger fish. So we'll see where this goes. But that is your intelligence bulletin of the week. And in Amazon news, if you're not familiar with the Amazon Echo, that is AKA Alexa, the smart home device, you're going to want to listen to this because I think this is actually rather interesting. Now, Amazon employs thousands of people around the world to help improve the Alexa's digital assistant powering in its line of Echo speakers. The team listens to voice recording captured in Echo's owners' homes and offices. The recordings are transcribed, annotated, and then fed back into the software as part of an effort to eliminate gaps in Alexa's understanding of human speech and to help it better respond to commands. Now, this team is comprised of a mix of contractors and full-time Amazon employees, and they work around the globe, literally Boston, Costa Rica, India, Romania, etc. And according to these people, they have basically signed non-disclosure agreements that does not allow them to speak publicly. But again, we have some whistleblowers, which kind of ties into our deep dive today, about this program. Now, here's the thing. They work 9 hours a day, and each reviewer basically has to parse roughly 1,000 audio clips per shift. Now, occasionally the listeners pick up things that, you know, if you own one of these things, you probably wouldn't want them to have, such as, let's say, a woman singing badly off key in the shower. That was one example given by the whistleblowers. A child screaming for help was another one. And a lot of times they hear things that are possibly criminal. So two of the workers that came forward said they believe what they heard was a sexual assault being picked up by the Amazon Echo. And when something like that happens, they oftentimes share this with the internal chat room. Now, they have an internal chat room for the other employees that are listening to stuff, and they will post stuff. Now, this might be innocent in the sense that if they're trying to listen and transcribe and they can't understand something, they'll put it up in the chat and say, hey, what word do you think this, you know, sounds like? But they're also sharing things like potential sexual assault in this with other employees. And they're saying that this is a stress reliever for their job. Now, Amazon says that it has procedures in place for workers to follow when they hear something distressing. But two of the Romanian employees that came forward said that after requesting guidance, they were told that it's not Amazon's job to interfere with this. And Amazon said, and I quote, "We take the security and privacy of our customers' personal information very seriously. We only annotate an extremely small sample of Alexa voice recordings in order to improve the customer experience. For example, this information helps us train our speech recognition and natural language understanding systems so Alexa can better understand your requests and ensure the service works well for everyone. We have strict technical and operational safeguards, and we have a zero tolerance policy for the abuse of our system. Employees do not have direct access to information that can identify the person or account as part of this workflow. All information is treated with high confidentiality, and we use multi-factor authentication to restrict access, service encryption, and Yeah, service encryption and audits of our control environment to protect it. And so the bottom line here is that if you have an Amazon Echo and you're talking to this thing, or you know, you're just talking in the room, it is recording, and people, thousands of them potentially on the Amazon side, are actually listening to this. Now, if you believe Amazon, it's randomized and they don't know who you are, but here you go. Your Amazon Echo has to listen. And I actually did a live video of this, I want to say about a year ago or so, after a story came out where a woman and her husband in Portland were being recorded, and that recording got sent through the Echo to one of the husband's employees. And basically, Amazon came out with this thing saying, oh, they triggered a series of keywords, which is basically mathematically astronaut. It'd be like me throwing a baseball and, you know, being able to hit Pluto. I mean, it's that kind of thing. And I did a video on just how it has to listen in order to trigger its keyword. And so if the keyword is Alexa, I did like Schmexa, Rexa, Brexa, Integra, Allegra, you know, and then I say Alexa and it fires right up. And so hopefully you're not listening to this in, you know, in proximity to one of those things. But if you are, Amazon's probably listening to this radio show too. So take that for what it's worth. But if you have an Amazon Echo, it is being recorded. They are listening to this in some way, shape, or form. And so if you're cool with that, here we are. But that is your Amazon news of the day. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in Apple news, and this might be, this may not be news to some of you, Apple Maps sucks. I'm not going to lie. I'm just going to put it out there. It really does suck. Ever since it came out, it's been riddled with inaccuracies and misdirections and all this kind of stuff. And quite frankly, I don't care what you think about Google, they actually do make a better map and direction product than Apple. And so I say this to say that if you are using Apple Maps and you are also making bad life choices, then you basically don't want to be using Apple Map. And I will give you the perfect example of this. Now, we're going to be talking about a man named Constantine Zathalis. And if you're not familiar with Constantine, I'm not surprised. He's a Canadian citizen. He's out of Quebec. And he has a whole bunch of gambling debt, a couple grand worth of gambling debt. And so he went to his bookie or whoever he had the debt with and said, hey, I really need to pay this off, but I don't have the cash. What can I do? And the bookie gave him basically a package and said, hey, I want you to drive this from Montreal to Calgary. And, once you've done that, all good. And so he said, okay. And he got into his car, and not knowing how to get from one Canadian city to the other, he opens up Apple Maps and punches in how to get to Calgary. And Apple Maps, on the way. Here we go. And here's what happens. Apple Maps definitely starts directing him to Calgary, but takes him to Port Huron. Now, if you're not familiar with Port Huron is a border crossing into the United States, and the U.S. Customs found 10 pounds of methamphetamine in tablet form in this package in his car. And so he claimed ignorance, basically told U.S. Border, like, hey, I have no idea, I'm just paying off a debt. Basically, I didn't know I was doing this. And the Border Customs came out and said, well, yeah, we were pretty sure he has no idea, you know, what he was carrying. But nevertheless, he's narcotics trafficking and attempting to move 10 pounds of meth into the United States. And so he is now under arrest and facing trial. So once again, if you are making bad choices, Apple Maps shouldn't be one of those. And that is your Apple News of the Week. And in major threats to U.S. national security, we're going to be talking about the latest national security threat out there, and that is Grindr. Now, if you're not familiar with Grindr, basically Grindr is the Tinder for the LGBT community. And so from some of the articles that I read, basically they were saying that Grindr has essentially changed the face of how the gay community operates, when they are, you know, connecting with each other, getting dates with each other, and hooking up with each other. Because if they are the Tinder of the gay community, then basically a lot of it is a hookup app. Now, the reason why this is a major national security issue is that Grindr, if you did not know, has been purchased by a Chinese corporation called Kunlun. Now, Kunlun has owned Grindr for the last few years, but the U.S. government is now taking notice of this, and they are actually requesting, just short of absolutely trying to force Kunlun from selling Grindr back in the United States. Grindr was founded in West Hollywood and basically has been operating for years until about 2016, 2017, when Kunlun bought them. But here's the thing. most Chinese companies that, you know, are holding and storing that data give the Chinese government access to this. And I basically wrote an article a while back saying, you know, China is destroying our future leaders, talking about TikTok, you know, in this. And now Grindr is basically possibly having a serious issue in affecting military personnel, intelligence personnel, and government entities, in the sense that, you know, for example, let's say you are gay and you have a high position in intelligence or the military or, you know, a government leadership role, but you're not out. And a lot of the information that we find on Grindr is going to be very graphic. Things like text messages or messages, pictures, videos, all this kind of stuff, because it's essentially a hookup app. And so if the Chinese government has all of your, you know, dirty details, if you will, you know, from Grindr, they might be able to use that as leverage against you. Oh, well, you haven't, you know, come out yet. Nobody knows this. And now I've got all of your risque photos, all of your pictures, all of your everything that you've put on here. That's a serious problem for national security. And so the government is now finally, like I said, taking notice. So we'll see where this goes, you know, but it's one of the things I think that we have to really, you know, take consideration of just as ourselves. I mean, if you want to use Grindr, fine, just understand, like, you know, where your data is going. Same with Tinder, same with Facebook, same with Google, same with everything. You know, the data can be weaponized if it falls into the wrong hands. And if a company like Grindr is owned by another company that is beholden to a government that wants to data mine you, that wants to look for that through that information, you know, looking for, let's say, things that would give them leverage in diplomacy or negotiation, we're asking for trouble. So please just be aware of who owns your data and what. And I would limit that if you can. But I mean, that's a serious, serious issue for, you know, for literally millions of Americans, you know, that use Grindr. So heads up on that. And that is your national security news of the day. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this week's Breaches of the Week is absolutely insane. I can almost guarantee you that pretty much everybody listening to this has been affected in some way, shape, or form. And we're going to start with Facebook because that's probably why. Now, if you're familiar, Facebook basically has a ton of third-party developers that have deep hooks into Facebook to develop their apps, their programs, and all of this. But Facebook also, for money, allows them to data mine users. And so what we have seen over the years, last year was pretty much a bombshell year for Facebook in this sense, with Cambridge Analytica coming out saying we have been scraping data and building psychographic profiles on millions of users and all of that. Well, the last couple of weeks have been absolutely no different. Researchers at UpGuard found over 100,000 Facebook-related databases in Amazon Web Services that could be insecure. Now, Amazon Web Services, basically, this is the hosting infrastructure for Amazon, and a lot of major companies use them, including third-party developers. So Netflix, for example, hosts a lot of their streaming service on Amazon. They're that big. Amazon's that big. And so a lot of these third-party developers that Facebook allows to get very deep hooks into their information basically have been storing these things in AWS, in Amazon Web Services, and they've been insecure. The largest one of those is a company out of Mexico City called Cultura Colectivo, and UpGuard found over 540 million users were exposed in that single database alone. And there are over 100,000 of these databases containing usernames, passwords, you know, a whole bunch of statistical information on you, could be age, location, and on and on and on, that basically is out there and exposed for pretty much anybody that knows how to get to that. You do not have to be a hacker, can go and start looking this stuff up. That is absolutely massive. And this comes on the heels of the last disclosure that I had on my radio show, where Facebook was storing hundreds of millions of passwords, your password, my password, everybody, in plain text. And so instead of encrypting the passwords to protect them, they could literally read the passwords on the back end. And it wasn't just like two Facebook employees. It was over 20,000 Facebook employees that knew your name, your email address, and your password, letter for letter, number for number, character for character. That is absolutely insane. And Facebook, guys, come on. You're killing me here. You really are. Moving on, we're going to go to India for this. Now, the Indian Health Agency just exposed 12.5 million records of pregnant women. The Indian government agency exposed this database containing the 12.5 million records, basically because they had a database called MongoDB that was misconfigured and just exposing this. And a researcher found this information on March 7th, 2019, and it just came out in the last couple of weeks. And so if you are in India and listening to this, and I do have some people there that catch this when it hits iTunes and SoundCloud, heads up to you. Moving on, we are going to be going to Germany real quick. German drug maker, basically one of the, well, I think they're the largest drug maker in Germany and probably one of the largest in the world, Bayer, said it was victimized in a cyber attack that appears to have originated with Chinese hackers. Now, German media reported this a week ago Thursday. Investigators are examining the breach, and they said that attackers were using a specific kind of malware called WinTie, which is actually tied to a Chinese-based hacking group known as Wicked Panda. The investigation is still underway, though the initial probe found no evidence of data theft at Bayer or personal information being stolen from third parties. So we'll see where that goes. It's obviously still in its preliminary stages, but Bayer is a massive, massive company. So we'll see what happens there. Next, we're actually going to be moving on to Mar-a-Lago. Now, if you're not familiar with Mar-a-Lago, it is also known sometimes as the Winter White House. This is a golf resort off of Florida that is owned by President Trump, and he spends a lot of time there. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago or so, a woman named Yujing Chang was found with two Chinese passports, four cellular telephones, a laptop, an external hard drive, and a flash drive that had injectable malware on it, and she was able to get past the first layer of Secret Service. They perceived a language barrier with her, and then when the resort said, well, we actually do have a member whose last name is Shang, they said, okay, go ahead. She said she wanted to go to the pool, yet she had no towel or swimsuit with her, and when she got to reception, she gave the receptionist of Mar-a-Lago a different story about attending an event about Chinese-American relations or some such. That event did not take place, and the receptionist alerted Secret Service. And upon questioning her, they found that there was actually no language barrier at all. And so there you go, 32-year-old Chinese national with injectable malware. And so when they plugged the flash drive into a laptop, it immediately infected it. So I hope that every computer that she could have potentially had access to at Mar-a-Lago has been taken offline and is being checked at the moment. So we'll see where that goes. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a company called BitThumb or ByThumb or ByteHum, something along those lines. Now, basically, this is a cryptocurrency exchange based in South Korea, but is used globally. Hackers were able to break in and steal over $19 million of cryptocurrency. And so it's one of the big problems we have with this. If you're using online exchanges, you're relying on them to securely, basically encrypt your data and keep it protected. And we've seen exchange after exchange being hit and millions in cryptocurrency, whatever cryptocurrency, being stolen. So if you use ByteThumb, you might want to check your account. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Georgia Tech, the university. They just revealed a data breach of 1.3 million records. They said the security failure occurred due to a web application which was vulnerable to outside entry. In other words, something on one of their websites had a flaw in it that hackers were able to exploit and then exfiltrate 1.3 million records through Georgia Tech's infrastructure. So if you are related in some way, shape, or form to Georgia Tech as an organization and a university, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Earl Enterprises. Now, if you're not sure who these people are, they are actually the parent company of Planet Hollywood, Buca di Beppo, and a couple of other restaurant chains. Last week, they admitted to suffering a payment card data breach over a 10-month period, with 2 million credit and debit cards being available on the dark web for weeks before it was discovered. So if you have eaten at Planet Hollywood or Buca di Beppo in any, you know, time period, heads up to you. Moving on, we are going to be talking about iPhones. Now, a newly discovered malware is believed to have stolen the login credentials for more than 225,000 iPhone users. This compromise is the largest compromise of iPhones ever recorded, and it comes from a piece of malware called KeyRadar. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. This only impacts people who have jailbroken their phones. Now, if you are not familiar with the process of jailbreaking, basically, Apple puts a lot of restrictions on their phones, as do carriers like Verizon, Sprint, etc. And Google basically has very few, but Apple likes to keep its ecosystem. So if you jailbreak an Apple phone, that allows you to open up the iPhone to install apps from outside of the App Store. The App Store is very heavily regulated and controlled, unlike the Google Play Store, which is a lot more Wild West. And so if you have an Apple and you want apps that you can't typically get from the iPhone store, jailbreaking your phone is one way to knock those restrictions out. But the problem is that, you know, here we have a very pervasive bit of malware that has literally infected 225,000 iPhones. So heads up to you guys that are running jailbroken iPhones, you might actually be infected. Moving on, it's tax season, so let's talk about the IRS real quick. Now, the IRS Commissioner Josh Koskinen, that's I think how you pronounce it, and I apologize, Josh, if you're listening, testified before the Senate Finance Committee that a breach in IRS Data Retrieval Tool, or DRT, has allowed hackers to gain access to the personal information of 100,000 students who use this specific tool to fill out the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or FAFSA, forms. Now, identity thieves use this information to fill out fraudulent tax returns and steal an estimated $30 million from the U.S. government. Most of these fraudulent tax returns in question were filed in January, months after the IRS realized the tool posed a security risk. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.